Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Now, you know, Melissa and I, we get here each and every morning, bright and early, to prepare the show for you, okay? Now, you might think we go into extensive meetings, extensive writing sessions.
Which we do.
Which we do most of the time, but today... Today, we sat in Melissa's office, and we were looking at an app called FaceApp.
Yes.
And what FaceApp is, you put your picture in, I guess, and it will age you. You can see what you will look like when you get old. Now, folks, I'm not making fun of you. If you're already old, you probably don't want to do it. All right?
Right.
Okay? If you're already an old person... Okay, you probably don't want to do it because it'll probably just be a cadaver. That's probably what you would say. Yeah. But in the case of Melissa and I, especially Melissa, who has quite a long way to go, we tried this. And I have to tell you, my picture was absolutely shocking. I looked like the Crypt Keeper.
I think you look like a cute grandpa.
Is that what that?
Here, look at. Hold on. I'm going to show you again. Here's you.
Okay, all right.
I think you look like a cute grandpa who has, like, an awful lot of stories, but you fall asleep halfway through them. That's what you look like.
That's what I'm doing now, in fact. Yeah.
No, I know. Okay. Right, I know. Yeah. Wake up, Tony. Hold on. I'm not done with my story.
Very hard to stay awake during the show.
Me, though, I have to say, which I'm really, like, bummed about because I make it such a point to not sit out in the sun because I'm scared of skin cancer. I feel like I'm one of those people who try to keep up with society and act not my age. Look at all those wrinkles. Like, I'm out trying to tan... And I tried maybe some Botox, and it just didn't go well for me.
Either that or you put on a few pounds as you're getting older.
I think so, too. I got really fat, too.
Yeah, it's
that's so unfortunate.
Now, if people want to try this...
You should. You absolutely should.
All right. What do they do if they want to try it?
It's not hard. So the reason that we tried this is because a bunch of celebrities, a lot of people have been trying what's called the Face app. Look at this. I just came on Facebook, and this was my former co-anchor at my old place. He tried it, too. Everyone's trying it. It's all over Facebook, and all you have to do is download. It's a free app. Go to your app store and download Face app. So Face APP. And it's free. All you do, like you said, Tony, you punch in your picture and there's a little button at the bottom that says, do you want to put makeup on? Do you want to age yourself? Press age and it'll bring you to when you're in your 80s and 90s.
Okay. All right.
And just try to laugh about it because at first I thought, oh, God.
Now, are you going to put that picture or picture right there on Facebook?
So I already put it on our Instagram page. I'm posting it to Facebook right now as we speak because I'm able to do both, which is crazy. But yeah, I'm putting it on Facebook as we speak.
Okay.
Because people have to see this. Yes. I mean, you may be the cutest grandpa I've ever seen.
But please tell Melissa and I, are we aging gracefully or, is it going to be a problem when we reached our advanced ages?
There. I think you look good, Tony. I have to say, if this is how you're going to look at 80, or even 90, I think you look good. Me, I think I look atrocious.
Okay.
I think I need to go to the gym today. I think I need to never be outside in the sun again. And if I ever thought about possibly doing Botox, I should just not do it ever.
All right.
That's everything I learned today. So right. There you go.
Melissa's going to place that on our Facebook page. Take a look at it. Comment on it. Tell us what you think. I mean, are we in trouble? Are we aging gracefully? Tell us what you think. All right?
Yeah, please. And don't be too brutal.
Yeah, please.
Please. We already have horrible self-esteem,
please don't
be too brutal.
All right. Earlier this morning, we started doing this Face app thing. This is taking the country by storm, and Melissa and I have been doing it. We took a picture, we put it into Face app, and what it does is it shows you what you will look like as you get older, okay? And I've got to tell you, I mean, I saw our picture. I don't know what the fans think, if that's what you call them, the people. What do they think? We put it on Facebook. We have you look at the picture, and we'd like to read your comments. My only thing is, it's when I get to be 78, 80 years old, I'm going to have jowls.
I think that's probably my favorite part is that you keep saying that and then you're not completely wrong. You're not totally wrong, Tony. I have to say thank you to the listeners who, first of all, are with us. We love spending our mornings with you guys. It's really cool to be able to connect with you guys on Facebook. So that's neat. But also, everyone was, for the most part, very gracious. And I appreciate that. I do have a couple that are borderline, a little honest. And that's okay. I think it's good. This is what we need. So we're going to read, a lot of the comments right now. Of course, now they're starting to roll in a little bit more. I know Rita Johnson just popped up and says, looks good to me. Rita Johnson Weaver. She says, looks good to me. Hey, oh, thanks, Rita.
Okay, Rita. Thank you very much. Lovely Rita.
We appreciate that. Also, Maria Costco says, you guys look adorable.
Oh, well, I knew I was adorable. I mean, you didn't have to tell me that.
I know. I was going to say, Tony, you do make, yeah, seriously, the cutest grandfather, seriously, ever. Mm. Irene Ruggiero says, not bad at all. A few wrinkles, but not bad. You're being really nice, Irene. I have so many wrinkles. It's bad. But, Tony, you look good. So, there you go.
Okay.
Christopher Goff says, wish I looked that good.
Oh, all right.
Well, okay. Thank you, Christopher. We appreciate that. Susan Ross says, oh, the both of you look good. Well, Susan, you look good.
There you go.
I appreciate that. Here we go. Let's have some of the borderline comments. First of all, Stephanie Alexis says, I'm sorry, but this whole turning yourself into old people is just weird, and I'm not about it. Hashtag forever young. It's weird. She's not wrong. It is weird.
Well, she's probably figuring we get there soon enough if we're lucky enough, you know?
That's true. That's true.
Why rush things, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I like that. Marino Giuliano says, oh boy, sorry, Melissa, that is not flattering, but I still love you.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
I mean, you're not wrong, Marino. I literally thought I got horrible Botox and I gained about 30 pounds. So, I mean, he must think you look good, Tony, though. Maybe he's got a guy crush on you. So, there you go.
He wouldn't be the first one. All right.
That's true. And Tanya came right back at Marino and says, well, I think you still look amazing, Melissa. Well, thank you, Tanya. I don't think so. And we'll end it with Cheryl Maloney, who says, you both look happy. That's what matters.
All right. That was a backhanded compliment.
That was, well, you know, we still love you, but hey, not your best look. So thank you, Cheryl.
Very
thank you,
funny,
everyone.
Cheryl. Thank you very, very much. All right. There you go. Thanks for sparing our feelings.
It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
Hey, you know, every Wednesday at this time, we take a moment and we speak with Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim. Mr. Ganim, how you doing this morning?
I'm really good. How about yourself?
Oh, all right. We are doing really well and so glad you're here. And I'll tell you, he has a commitment to this show because the man is in Washington, D.C. right now as we speak. Mayor, what's going on over there with housing development and issues here in Bridgeport?
Sure. It's very hot down here weather-wise, too. So I just, I don't know how it is, but it's going to be hot this weekend. So everyone just take heed to that. We'll deal with that as it comes along. Anyway, we could be helpful. But yeah, we're down here dealing with, I guess, unfortunately, some hot topics. Certainly want to bring people up to speed if we could for a moment, especially with things like federal government, it's called HUD, Housing and Urban Development. They kind of oversee the public housing, which people are aware of throughout the country, but in this case in Bridgeport. And green homes has become an area of great concern to this administration in partnership with our local housing authority and residents, city council members and others. So I'm particularly down here to talk to Washington HUD or Washington Housing and Urban Development to strategize on ways that we can, what I'd like to see is a complete better living condition scenario for the residents that are there, probably in other locations. And we need to facilitate that and expedite it because of safety concerns, sanitation concerns. We had a whole task force go through green homes recently. And with that came out with some startling conclusions about, I think, the lack of what we'd like to see for livability for the residents that are there. So it's a challenge. We're not unique in this, but this place, I think, particularly needs our attention. And as mayor, in conjunction with other elected officials of the Housing Authority, we're going to do that. So hopefully the Washington HUD office will be helpful as they have been in the past, along with the other offices that oversee this.
And we understand, Mayor, that this was something we kind of dove into last week following the shooting that happened on the 4th of July. And we were talking about one of the green complex here and how it's a senior living facility. But sometimes we're seeing, unfortunately, there's just not great conditions or there's violence, things that are going on. And I know that's something that's been on your plate, one of your priorities. So it's great that you guys are talking about that in Washington. So can we switch gears really quick and talk about the FAA? What's going on with Sikorsky Airport?
Well, we think that as a positive note is something that we can work on with their help. Look, we all know Sikorsky Airport is a great little airport. It's never gotten the attention and support that I think we should give it. We've been trying now for over 3 years, and the last time I was mayor for a long time, trying to get them to allow us to expand without being confrontational with local residents. I think we can work through all that. We have an end user who wants to run regular commercial service out of there, which would make that a huge asset to the city, but the region and the state. talk to the governor about this. He understands that. He understands the dynamics of transportation. And so we're down here with federal officials, I don't want to say pleading our case, but just trying to get on the same page as to how we make this happen so that we can get what will be millions of dollars of investment. But as much as that's important, transportation, you imagine you'd be able to drive 5 minutes up the road, go to up to Sikorsky and fly to, whether it's here in Washington or wherever it is, people like to go to Florida for their vacations, across the country. What that would do for our region, for business, for the ability for businesses to say, oh, no, just fly right in, and you're right here, not just in Fairfield County, not in the greater Bridgeport region, but just so locally, not have to deal with New York traffic or trying to drive all the way, let's say, to Bradley up in the Hartford, Springfield area. So I'm excited about that. Those are some of the means we have today. And then with our congressional people, our U.S. senators are down here. They have a group of people from Connecticut here. And I'm going to just touch base with them, certainly, as we have on some of the concerns we have with how ICE acts and has recently in our city. And that'll, along with some other stuff, will fill most of the day today. And then I'll be back.
All right. We're speaking with Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim, our weekly visit with him. Mayor, can we touch on the ICE raids? We understand someone in Bridgeport was arrested by the agency.
That's right. That came to our attention after. Bridgeport, you know, council people, along with the mayor, with me, is, you know, the mayor, have taken a very strong position on Bridgeport being a welcoming city. We passed a resolution. Our police department, in that resolution, and emphatically by our chief, by me, and by others, have said that we are not and will not be an arm of ICE. People do not have to fear Bridgeport police on these immigration matters. We were not and are not part of what they're doing. We can't control them, and they, I think, are doing their job, I guess. I'm not happy with the way they do it, frankly, coming into a community without notifying local law enforcement, coming into a community in unmarked vehicles. It is put with the rhetoric that comes out of Washington on this stuff now. It has put fear in people that are worried about getting separated from their families. I've opposed this with other mayors. Was down at the border in El Paso last year where the separation took place. We'll do everything we can to help protect people in the city of Bridgeport. Say that again, to remain committed to being a welcoming city and do everything that we can within the law to do that. People need to know that Bridgeport Police Department is not part of this, will not be a part of it, lawfully cannot be a part of it, and we'll do what we can to protect all of our residents.
Yeah. Mayor Ganim, I know you're busy. We know you're busy. And we thank you so much for taking a few minutes, because I'm sure your schedule is out of control while you're there in Washington. We'll talk to you next week. Will you be home next week?
Yeah, when are you going home?
No, I'll be home late. Yeah, I'll be home either later tonight or early in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Traffic permitting.
Okay.
That's why it'd be great if you could fly into Sikorsky. That's where that would come in handy.
I drove down. Figured by the time I drive to New York.
Forget it. You might as well keep going.
So one more plug for a better upgraded Sikorsky Airport. All the best to you, and we'll talk to you again soon.
WICC 600's Tony and Melissa in the Morning present Community Inspiration. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things in our own backyard.
Earlier in the week, we were talking about a gentleman by the name of Russell Edgett, and he is a veteran. He walks 60 miles from Fairfield to Hartford, and I gave Melissa a direct order to get in touch with this gentleman and put him on Community Inspiration. Now, she was going to do this anyway, but it was a very uplifting story, and I'm very glad that you got him.
Yeah, I'm excited, too, because I think going overseas to serve our country, it's no small task, Tony, and of course, many of us, we tip our hats to servicemen and women. Maybe we give a donation here and there, but honestly, we kind of go on with our lives in the way that we go, but that's not the case for Russell Edgett. He is an Army veteran. He served in Afghanistan twice, and actually he came back with, he has PTSD now, and he also has a traumatic brain injury. So we found out he and his wife created a foundation, and they're trying to help other homeless veterans and help other veterans who have what are called invisible wounds, just like he has. So we wanted to talk to him a little bit more about that. Obviously, his walk is what sparked our interest, but really the work that he and his wife have done is what made him this week's Community Inspiration.
Back in January of 2009, as I was driving a truck in a convoy, I was blown up by a roadside bomb. And that's where I suffered some physical injuries And that's where I got the TBI, because I slammed my left side of my body against the driver's side door. And the PTSD stems from that time and that deployment, because I lost a few friends there, and my second deployment where I lost two very close friends of mine in 2012.
I'm so sorry. That's really hard to swallow. When you hear about people who have PTSD or even a traumatic brain injury, or in your case, both, for a lot of people, that would be enough to call it quits and maybe feel sorry for themselves, but not you. You are staying active. Why?
Because when my wife and I came home in 2014, it took us over 2.5 years to find a place to live. The VA does what they can. They point you in the right directions, but other places that they point you to don't help.
What are veterans up against when they come home? Because I think a lot of times people think there's so much support, but it doesn't seem like that's always the case.
Basically what happens is people do not really realize, because it's been so long since anyone's had a veteran in their family, that there's always been veteran housing up until the Vietnam War. After the Vietnam War, because of the division in the country and the lack of support for the war, veterans did not go into veteran housing because they didn't want to be identified as veterans. And as a result of that, much of the veteran housing has been privatized, sold, and then it's no longer available. The organizations that are in existence currently to help veterans with housing basically travel one of two paths. They either help single soldiers or they help soldiers with small children. If you are a soldier and your spouse, or a soldier with an older child, there's this huge chasm that you fall through.
And for anyone who's listening, that was Sabine Edgett. That is Russell's wife. And the two of you were able to do this journey this past weekend where, Sabine, you were driving behind Russell to make sure if he needed anything, you were there. And Russell, you walked dozens of miles.
I decided to do this just to bring the awareness to our issues. But because of my physical limitations, during that 60 miles, for about, I'd say, 3 to 5 miles, I had to use my wheelchair.
Yeah, but still such an incredible journey. How can other people get involved?
I think the first thing that the public needs to be aware of is that you can't judge the veteran by their cover. Because my husband's had situations where people have looked at him and said, "You look perfectly normal, go get a job." But most of his issues are in his head. Just because someone doesn't look injured doesn't mean they're not. So be sensitive to that. And if you know someone's a veteran, be there to listen. Sometimes a homeless veteran, for example, may just want somebody to listen to them and hear their story. That will raise their spirits. As far as something more concrete, volunteer. You know, just volunteer with a veterans organization.
And that was, again, Sabine Edgett, who is Russell's wife. The two of them are kind of a pair. They made this foundation 3 years ago. It's called Freedom Isn't Free, the Ride Foundation. And actually, Tony, they have a motorcycle ride. That's their annual event where they raise the most money. And that's going on August 3rd. It's a 60-mile ride. I think it starts in Fairfield, and it's all the back roads. They end up at Joey C's Boathouse in Stratford. And again, it's raising money for homeless veterans and veterans who have what's called invisible wounds like what Russell has.
That man right there, I never met him, just heard that little piece there. He's a hero. He really, really
is.
Yeah,
he really is.
And when something like this happens to you, it's very easy to go to your bedroom, get in bed, and pull the covers over your head and just say, the hell with it.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman did not do that. And as I listened to his wife, she's probably right behind him going, "No, you're going to do this," mm-hmm. giving him the push that he probably needs.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's all about the support. Sometimes it's all about your support system. That's what keeps you going.
Yeah, and when I was talking to Russell, I said to him, you know, this probably seems like a very cliche question. I'm sure many reporters have asked you this, but how often do you think about your time overseas? And he says, "I think about it every day." Mm-hmm. "I think about it most minutes a day." And what I thought was interesting was I said, "Well, then why walk 60 miles? To me, he was kind of quoted a bunch of times talking about how this is something he did in his training. They would go on very long walks for training, and it brought him back kind of to that place. And I thought, well, why do something like that? And he said,
it is a cause that I'm so behind. I'd rather bring myself back to a dark place to bring awareness to other people suffering than to just sit back and watch the system fail too many people. And I just thought that spoke such volumes. You're willing to bring yourself to a place that is so dark and so hard for you just to help other people you don't even know. I think he's unbelievable.
Well, reading between the lines, in other words, he'll do whatever it takes to get the message across.
Exactly.
And that's what it's all about. God bless him. And now, forgive my ignorance, because maybe you did mention it in that piece. Was this 60 miles straight?
Yes.
No breaks?
I mean, no.
Maybe a break to go to the bathroom or something.
Sure.
But I mean, for the most part, he walked from Fairfield to Hartford, straight through.
Correct. He said that for about 3 to 5 miles of it, Tony, he did need to bring his wheelchair out. That was the part that you had heard. His wife brought the wheelchair out, and he wheeled himself for about 3 to 5 miles. He said his back started to kind of give out, so he needed that support. But then he continued on. So I said, I'm pretty sure 55 miles is more than I've walked my whole life. So I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, well, that doesn't count. I mean, it was very impressive. So, yeah, he went straight through.
All right. God bless you, Russell. You're a hero. That's for sure. And, you know, a lot of people, they consider a guy like Tiger Woods their hero, or a guy like Aaron Judge. But a guy like Russell here, he's the real hero. And Aaron Judge would be the first one to tell you that. You know, that's what that's all about.
You're so right.
He's the real hero. With us here this morning is Sarah Holdren. She's with the Mighty Quinn Foundation. Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
We're doing just fine. Before we even get into it, explain to us, what is the Mighty Quinn Foundation?
Well, the Mighty Quinn Foundation is a not-for-profit in Stratford, Connecticut that is dedicated to arts education for young people. And I specifically work for a major program of the Mighty Quinn Foundation called the Shakespeare Academy at Stratford, which is a really wonderful 6-week-long intensive residential training program for college students in Shakespeare that offers performances of Shakespeare plays every summer right here in Stratford.
I was going to say, when you say young people, Sarah, immediately I thought, so are you talking high school or so college students? Are these college students who go to college in Connecticut, or are they just people who live in Connecticut, they're home for the summer, and they're interested in being actors and actresses?
You know, they are actually from all over the world, which is one of the things that makes the program really exciting. When we started 6 years ago, we originally envisioned it as maybe a more local program, but as it grew, there was just so much interest and a wonderful opportunity for people to come and stay in Stratford and experience all the history of the town and of the theater that's been made here. So actually, we accept applications and auditions from all over the country and the world. This year, we've got 14 student actors with us from as close by as Connecticut and New York, and as far away as Birmingham, England, and Mexico City.
Wow.
Okay, so they're studying, but they're also performing. Is that?
That's right.
Okay, and
yeah,
and
that's right.
When they finally, when they do a performance, can
they
I?
They do too. Yeah, it's actually a really it's kind of a unique thing because we really. It's not a workshop. It's not a kind of. They're not leading up to a sort of small, you know, one-time student performance. They really are leading up to creating not one, but two really professional-level productions. One of the things we do with them as a company is that we rehearse two different Shakespeare plays in repertory with each other. So this year they're performing Coriolanus and The Winter's Tale, and they'll be performing them for a little over a week, every other night, back to back, in fully staged, fully designed productions that, again, people are welcome to come and see, and we hope they do.
Well, Shakespeare is such a specialty, though. You know, I mean, it's one thing to be an actor, but to act and do Shakespeare, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things. So I personally am a director who is incredibly passionate about Shakespeare, but I also recognize that it's something that maybe for a lot of people, you know, we maybe experience it in high school. And, you know, maybe if we're lucky, we experience it with a good teacher who kind of galvanizes our interest. But for a lot of people, you know, it's kind of presented as something that, you know, here's this big classic thing that you should love and you should respect. But, you know, it can seem like a foreign language, or it can seem sort of distance from us. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about in this program is, you know, these actors come in and they, I mean, clearly they wanted to come do this thing. You know, they've already got an interest, but we're really seeking to kind of, you know, to dive deep into like what makes Shakespeare so incredibly exciting and still accessible and still really vibrant for modern performers and for modern audiences. The shows we do are 90-minute adaptations, so we use original language, but we cut the shows down to about 90 minutes, so they don't have an intermission. They're like a fun, swift thing to sit through as an audience member. And the students do an incredible amount of masterclass work here at this program. They train with teachers from all sorts of really amazing institutions, people who have taught at the Yale School of Drama, at Juilliard, at NYU. And so they're all day long, they're working on studying the text. They're working on physical movement. They're working on breathing and voice. They're sort of honing their tools all day long every day, and then they're rehearsing in the afternoons and evenings and bringing everything that they've been studying in classes to the study of these plays.
We're talking to Sarah Holdren, who is with the Mighty Quinn Foundation, based right here in our area in Stratford. I have to ask, Sarah, because when you're describing all of this to me, it honestly reminds me of a local version of kind of like a Mickey Mouse Club. You have people who are honing in on different skills, and they're being sort of transformed into better actors and actresses. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like with people like Justin Timberlake or Britney Spears or Christina Aguilera, they kind of found their fame from programs like this. So I'm wondering, would you say that the Mighty Quinn Foundation is sort of a nice springboard, a good platform for some of these actors to move on to the big screen, to bigger things?
I mean, we really hope that people find their passion here, you know, whether that means that, you know, that they go on to apply for a grad school or to find success in acting of some kind, or whether it means that they might become directors or people working on some other capacity in theater or performance. We've definitely had some students who've gone on to the Yale School of Drama right down the road, which is a wonderful program. So we hope so. We really hope that this is a place where, you know, where this thing that they've come, maybe because they, you know, they had an interest, but, you know, maybe that interest wasn't entirely cemented. We hope that it becomes something that, you know, in some form or another, they want to pursue and can pursue for the rest of their lives.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Sarah, did you know that Mighty Quinn is a song that was written by Bob Dylan?
I did know that.
Did you know that? I was wondering if you knew that. All right. How can people get involved?
Well, the simplest thing is to come and see us and come see our shows, which I very much hope you do, anyone who's listening. If you're listening, our show dates this year are July 27th through August 4th. So we open in a little over a week, about a week and a half away. And you can find out more about each show, about where we're located, at our website, which is ShakespeareAcademyStratford.org. We've got reservations available just in case you want to reserve beforehand, but you're also able to show up on the day of the show and see if there are any tickets left, which often there are. If you reserve beforehand, the tickets are $10, but if you take a little risk and show up on the day of the show, it's free. And there are lots of opportunities to get in and see them. We're located at 1850 Elm Street in Stratford, which is right on the grounds of the, you know, beautiful former American Shakespeare Festival Theater. So we feel really, really lucky and grateful to be, you know, to be performing in this space where this beautiful theater that's so tragically burned down in January used to stand. It feels like a really important thing to be able to continue to make theater, and especially Shakespearean theater, on this particular piece of ground. So we're right here on those grounds in Stratford. The performances are outdoors. They are 90 minutes long, and they'll be lots of fun. And if I have the time and you want, I can tell you, you know, a little bit about each one, about The Winter's Tale and about Coriolanus.
Sure. What do you got for us?
Sure. Yeah. So they're both really fascinating shows. Coriolanus is Coriolanus is an action movie. Really, is how you should think of it. It's a big battles and blood full Roman tragedy, all about the kind of clash between power and populism, actually. So it's got some really sort of, you know, it's got some topics that are really kind of worth thinking about at the moment. It's all about the Roman citizenry who are starving and who want food, who want better treatment, who want a voice in politics. And it's about the sort of war hero rock star soldier that the patricians kind of give them to, you know, to look to and to calm their sort of populist uprising instead. And obviously when, you know, you're protesting for rights and somebody gives you a sort of figurehead, things probably aren't going to go very well. So it's full of fights. We have a wonderful, wonderful director working with us on this show named Ben Kearns, who's also our masterclass teacher in stage combat and who's choreographing all the fights for this show. And we've got the show in a really interesting configuration that puts the audience really close to the action. So that one should be, a big adrenaline rush.
Yeah, that sounds
and then
wild.
go ahead. Sorry.
No, it sounds wild.
It sounds wild.
It is wild. Yeah, it's like it's a high energy show. And really a show that, you know, like it's actually funny. Shakespeare in the Park in New York is also doing it this year. So, you know, I think it's a show of the moment, actually. I think that it's a really, despite being set in, originally set in ancient Rome, the sort of political threads of it and the ideas of it seem really kind of present in our sort of current age of discontent. And then I'm doing a production called The Winter's Tale, which is just a really beautiful, very magical late play of Shakespeare's, where we begin in a land called Sicilia. And the whole story sort of kicks off because a king named Leontes is falsely jealous of his wife. He's afraid that she's had an affair. And it's not just the sort of normal run-of-the-mill jealousy. It's almost a kind of madness. And it drives him to do things that split apart his family, that split apart his kingdom. And the first part of the play, you know, almost sort of feels like a tragedy. And then Shakespeare pulls this incredible sort of genre shift where we jump forward 16 years, we go to another country, we follow these kind of almost magical developments and the things that are happening to the king's long-lost daughter. And then it all sort of comes back together at the end in what I would say is really sort of Shakespeare playing with certain ideas almost out of fairy tale, you know, and out of myth and these sort of miraculous elements of storytelling. It's a beautiful, funny, really, really interesting play because it crosses so many different tones and genres. And it comes back to a pretty incredible message about redemption and forgiveness and being able to continue living together even after really terrible things have happened. So that is our other play. It's also got a really fun element, which is that it's got a little processional element for the audience. So that play will actually take place in two different locations. You'll show up and then we're going to do a little moving in the middle of the play. So that's one thing where, you know, if you visit our website and you have any concerns about accessibility, you can get in touch with us and we'll figure out how to make it work for you. But it should be a fun, it's something we've never done at Shakespeare Academy before is add a sort of environmental element to our audience experience. And we're really excited about it.
Sarah, it sounds great. It really, really does. You sound very passionate about your work, and we thank you so much for taking a few moments and giving us some information. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's really great to talk to you.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Anytime at all. Today is Chase's birthday. That is Melissa's little son. He just turns a year old today. And I was reading this morning thinking of you because it says here, Melissa, moms spend over 14 hours, about 8 weeks, worrying about their baby's health in the first year of their lives.
Sure.
They're very, very worried during that time. And on average, a mom conducts 330 Google or internet searches about their baby's health and related parenting matters. And they're constantly on the phone with their own moms asking is this normal or why are they doing this? Why is this happening? Have you felt that anxiety?
So I feel the anxiety. I will say just from my own, I never was a Google search my symptoms. In fact, I never did it for myself. But I also have a little bit of a
I have a good deal. My mom is a registered nurse. So I've always, since I was a kid, would call my mom, even from school or in college, and say, Mom, I don't understand. Why am I feeling this way? Whatever. My mom gets constant phone calls. Just the other day, so Chase started walking at 10 and a half months, and he's a very early walker, which is great. But at the same time, he makes me crazy because I've got to follow him now. And the other day, he actually split his lip. He fell on the hardwood, and I, of course, went into a panic attack. I broke down, and my husband actually had to call my mother and was like, Claude, can you just tell us, is there something we can do besides ice? Is there really anything else we could do for Chase? And she said, Derek, he's a baby. He's going to beat himself up. This is literally going to happen all the time. Just try to stop the bleeding. Put an ice pack on it as best you can. And surprisingly, Chase was fine. I mean, he wasn't swollen. The next day, he had a little bit of a bump. It was gone 2 days later. But oh my gosh, of course we panic.
Well,
that's a disaster.
That's going to be the first of many, many falls by the time he reaches 2 years old.
I mean, exactly.
This is the way that it rolls. And you know something, and I don't mean this as a joke. I don't mean this for a laugh or whatever it is, but I don't think that mother's worry ever goes away. My kids are 28 and 31,
mm-hmm.
and my wife is still, you know, if they go like this, what's the matter? You know, hovering over them, you know, and I just don't think that
ever goes away.
Yeah.
Neither does the obsession with your children. I think if you're one of those parents that you were meant to be a parent, you love your kids, you'll do anything for them. Actually, yesterday, Tony, I thought you'd laugh at me, so I didn't bring this up at breakfast, but now I'm going to bring it up now. When Jay Michaels came in with Weeby, he's in the afternoons, and he came in, he just moved. He moved into the same complex as his daughters, mm-hmm. and that's why he was off last week. And I said, you know, how was the move, yada, yada. And he said, you know, it's great. I'm on the west side, they're on the east side of the complex, so there's still 5 minutes, but it's so nice living in the same complex as my kids. And I said, boy, I really hope Chase won't put us in a home and he puts us in the same complex as him. And he's like, oh, Melissa, you've got so many years to worry about that. And I'm like, is it weird that I'm worried about it right now on my kid's, you know, first birthday? I just want to know, Chase, are you going to put us in a home or are you going to put me and Dad in the same complex as you? I just want to, can I live up the street?
Well,
is that weird?
Let's wait until he's formed a couple of sentences so he can communicate, you know, to tell you
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I need to give it time.
You're going to be just fine. Don't worry about a thing. You're doing fine.
It's called Hold On. It goes like this. Hold on to what is good, even if it is a handful of earth. Hold on to what you believe, even if it's a tree which stands by itself. Hold on to what you must do, even if it's a long way from here. Hold on to life, even when it's easier letting go. And hold on to my hand, even when I have gone away from you.
Ah, simple.
Short and sweet. Then.
Quick. Simple and sweet.
Yeah.
I love it.
Something quick today for your thought and for your day.
Well, very good, Bill. Thank you so very, very much. Always
welcome.
Always uplifting. That's Bill Jackelman, Wednesday Wisdom.